Thanks, Amish. I'm an addict. Yeah, and if anyone can't hear me, ask me to speak up because I tend to mumble a lot and I'm really terrified at this moment of being sort of... I was really pleased to be asked to do this chair and then got here like always and just went, oh no, why did I do that? I haven't got anything to share, and all that doubt creeps in. And maybe that's to do with where I am at the moment in my life. I've got an awful lot that I wanted. I'm back in my flat. I've got a bit of money in my pocket. I've got a job. I've got the raise I wanted. I've got a fantastic sponsor. I've got a wonderful family. And with all that, I'm in a place that really, really isn't comfortable at the moment. It's just not comfortable. It's just... And I don't think it's for a bad reason, but it's because I'm in the middle of changing, which isn't something I particularly like to do. And so where I am today really is where I'll start. Is I'm in the middle of reading. Is it a step five? Is when you read your step four, I think I've got that right. And but it's been left right in the middle of it, and I'm sort of in this place where I'm having to face a few things I really don't like about myself, and I actually didn't really know were there. And my automatic thing would be to come in and moan about work and moan about this and that and my brother. And and the thing that's arising out of it is one of the things I'm very good at is manipulating sympathy out of people. And no one's really told me this, but I've suddenly realised that a tag that's followed me through my life is poorish. And poorish, you know what I mean? I can open my eyes very wide and make people feel very sorry for me, and I'm quite good at it, and I'll do the overtime, and I'll go right out of my way and turn up soaking wet at meetings, and yeah, I mean, because I cycle there rather than getting a train. And and it's a very comfortable role, and it's not one that I really realised I was doing or really working on the self-pity thing, because it's something I despise in other people. And I've been really horrible to people who I see as snivelling. And so that's sort of where I am at the moment. And the good news is that it can change. Yeah, I mean, it's just not too pleasant at the moment. And a little bit of, let me keep this here, where I come from. I came from a really lovely family, but really quite mad and very artistic. My dad's an actor, my mum's an artist. My mum was a sort of practicing addict and alcoholic during my growing up. I stayed with my dad, but I spent weekends with my mum. And I've said it in a lot of chairs, but it kind of split me, so I'd go into complete chaos, and I sort of lived in a recording studio on weekends, and then I'd go back to a very straight household during the weeks, and that's sort of how my life has been. It's been a long straight and narrow, and then I just sort of explode in chaos and just look to go off the rails, and then straight and narrow, and I don't know, since coming into the programme, I'm getting a bit of balance, really, on that. I came to NA, firstly, when I was 17, before I actually got a full-blown drug habit. My stepsister came to NA, brought me at 17, and everyone was telling me I was going to be an addict before I ever was. And so I came to the rooms really before I found the rooms, and it took me till 34, really, this time round, or 33, to get it. I was in and out over the years, talking the talk and just not really getting it and going out again, and it cost me a lot of time. I left home at 17, and very quickly I sort of was off the rails long before I picked up a drug. I was off the rails around men, and it's still a thing. I'd build my life around a man, and that would be my reason for living, and I would do anything, I would steal anything, I would be anything to be with that man. And and then the drugs followed. And by 17 I was living in a squat. I'd left home despite sort of having everything given to me there and all the privileges. I left home and went to live in Angel, and I was living in a squat by 17, begging, and pretty soon sticking speed in my arm, and which just went out of control. My best friend and my grandmother died, and so that was the solution, and it just got worse and worse and worse, and by the age of 19, 20, I was begging counsellors to help me, and that's sort of gone on through my years in begging counsellors. I just can't stop. Despite having been told all the NA stuff by my sister and about, I remember one of the first things I ever heard about NA was one is too many and a thousand never enough. And, but it didn't really sink in as applying to me. And it has eaten up a lot of my life, and I am coming to terms with that now. And I live there, I was living with a guy who was a dealer, so I was a dealer there, and then got into crack and heroin, and I was living with a guy who was a bike thief, and so I was a bike thief for years and years and years. And I was thinking tonight, God, usually on a Friday night, I'd be out there in the bike racks, you know what I mean, looking for the lock that I could undo. I wouldn't be in the meeting, you know what I mean? It's so nice not to be on that mission. And I saw one of those people who was still out there and who it's destroying. It made me really sad last night. It made me just to see him, and nothing's changed, really. And how old was I? By 26, I was living with another man in squalor in Islington, in a one-bedroom flat with three children of a woman who I deemed incapable of looking after her children, so I said I'd look after them. And it was complete madness. There was dog dirt everywhere, three children, a dog, a cat and a lizard, and me, and a boyfriend who came home sometimes with bikes, and that was it. And I started to, basically, I just couldn't cope with it anymore. I really couldn't. And I got put into rehab at a point where all I could do when I talked to anyone was cry. And I saw a psychiatrist first who read me poetry, and it was very strange, some Chinese psychiatrist who read me poetry in the thickest Chinese accent ever. But it kind of seemed normal to me, the state I was in. It seemed really, really, maybe that's what I needed. But I went to this rehab, got kicked out for a reason, but what I had on my side at that point was fear. And I came back to England, to London. London is England for me, but hit the meetings and got a sponsor and raced through the steps because I'm quite competitive. And I don't remember one of those steps that I did at that time. Took a meeting at 6 months, and I was just on this mad race, and stayed with a partner who was relapsing, and eventually the pain got too much and I went back out there, and I didn't tell anyone. And I guess the lesson from that was pride. That's another of mine. I didn't tell anyone, and I wouldn't ask for help, and I still find it really hard. And it took me 6 or 7 years to get back in. It cost me 6 or 7 years that basically I couldn't say help me or put my head back in the meeting, because I saw it as failure, which I don't believe it is. They were always there. It was me that wouldn't come back. And got back this time sort of through chance and circumstance, and I really believe this time, and I try and sort of go back to this when everything's going wrong, that something's looked after me all the way, like even through like disasters, really good things have come out of it. And I went into detox to save my flat, and then somehow ended up in a really, really good rehab for me, and I know that cleanliness can be achieved through the rooms, but for me that treatment was really good. And then a lot of it's been really good in my life. I managed to split up with my partner, who I was using with for 7 years, and that was a miracle. I never thought it could happen. I fell pregnant since I've been clean, and went to a meeting just not knowing what to do. You know what I mean? Because I'd wanted a child for years and years, but I couldn't have it with this man. And at this meeting was the person who became my sponsor. She was the person who reached out to me, and I just couldn't have asked for a better sponsor for me personally. She's wonderful. And and things like that all the way along. You know, even like at work the other day, I wasn't coping, and I'm a controller, which maybe isn't the best job for me. I control bikes and vans, and I wasn't coping, and I was praying in the toilet. I was just so stressed there. And the next day they moved me to a different sort of control circuit, or like eased the workload. And I hadn't freaked out or walked out, which would be my old thing. Yeah, and I do see that as something looking after me, you know, in that I won't be given more than I can bear in any situation. And so that's what I say, like, my life is really good today. I laugh a lot. As I said, I left that partner, and I have fallen in love with someone entirely inappropriate. And that's maybe my discomfort today, who's my brother's best friend. So I'm having this huge secret affair, who lives in my house, but my brother can't know. My brother lives in my house as well, so. I never said I was uncomplicated. If I can make a sort of mess, I will. And it's just becoming a bit too much, actually. And now I want my brother to move out, and I want this person to move out. And it goes further. The person's working for me now, so. Maybe that's why I'm really uncomfortable. So, yeah, but I know when things aren't right in myself. I think that's the change. I know something's not right here, and I know sort of it's too around him. I just got a bit of freedom, and it's all based around him. And the pain it puts me in sometimes, I've forgotten till recently. I had it the other night where things weren't going well, and it really, really is intense. And I remember why I picked up on that pain before. But I think this time, through taking it slowly, and I have got people I can always ring, and when it comes on me that I've got to stop this pain, there's two things I really hold on to, is that basically, spiritually and in surroundings, I've made a life that's really not, I don't want to lose when it comes down to it. I don't want to lose, you know what I mean, what I've got by appreciating, I don't know, laughing, my family, my flat, the people around me, the friendships I have, you know what I mean, the moments of peace I have, music, just everything. You can appreciate it. Cycling on my bike really madly and shouting at people, or you know what I mean, and it's not worth picking up just by appreciating my life. And I guess that's where gratitude comes in. And the other thing is, and I think it only came clearer the other day, was that thing of I just won't pick up today. If it really gets that bad when I'm in that black space, then I won't pick up today. And the thing is, it's always today, and I only figured that out the other day. So even if I said, right, I'll pick up tomorrow, and woke up the next day, it's today, so it doesn't count. And if I have to hold on to that, if I have to get on my knees, and I think, I'll finish on this, that a lesson to me the other day was, I was in another job recently, and I sort of got driven out, and they demoted me, and I couldn't take it. So I went back to my job that I'd left to go to this job, and I thought, it'll be all right, and I'll get this. And it was only when I got back to that job that I remembered why I'd left in the first place, and it had only been like 4 months before, and I thought, yeah, that's a bit like using, really, you know what I mean? I don't want to have to go back there to remember why I stopped. And if there's one thing I'd like to do more of, recommit to, is doing more meetings. I'm doing about 2 or 3 a week at the moment. I'd like to make it more, because that's where I'll get reminded, you know what I mean, why I stopped using. That's the same thing. I seem to have a problem with memory. So I think I'll leave it on that note. Thanks.
Thanks.